Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Private eyes are watching you. They see your every move. Private eyes are watching you. Private eyes are watching you.
But they're watching
the rogues are watching you. I know they're not exactly private eyes, but you know, they're from the darkness watching you. I don't know.
Well,
that's the song we came up with, okay?
It's good. It's Sneak Attack Rogue, Demir Rogue update time, and who doesn't love Hall & Oates? What's up, everybody? You are watching / Links of the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. All right, we're doing the budget upgrade guide for the Demir Rogue Tribal Sneak Attack deck. We already did the deck reveal video for this, so a lot of the information about the deck will be in that video. So if you haven't seen that, maybe go watch that and then watch this. But we're going to do the same thing we did for the Nye deck, which is suggest the 10 cards we think you should put into this deck, the 10 cards you should take out for around a $25 budget to get this thing up to speed and ready to tangle with quote-unquote real decks as soon as possible.
This is a real deck, by the way. We just want to make it realer.
I think most playgroups are playing around the 7 range of power level, and so to get this deck up to that, you know, where it has chance to win games in that arena, yeah.
Yep. And of course, if you want to pick up any cards that we mentioned today, or the deck itself, or any other sealed product, there's so much Magic product these days, and of course this is commander focused, commander specific, so it's made for us. And hey, I think it's a great way to get someone else into the game. The best way to do so is go to cardkingdom.com/command zone. They've got sealed single products, Magic cards, everything that you need to make this deck hum, sing, be
private eyes.
Or of course you can buy any of the cards from the new sets that are coming out. Commander Legends is on the way. There's so much exciting stuff, and you want to support our podcast because, well, you know, it really does help keep the lights on around here, keep our content flowing. You do so at cardkingdom.com/command zone. That's all you have to do. Enter the URL, the affiliate link, and you're on the website and ready to buy.
Yeah, you're gonna buy Magic cards anyway. Just use the affiliate link when you do. It's really easy. And then once you get this deck, or both these decks, or whatever it is that you get, you're gonna want to sleeve the thing up. And this is a great time to try out the new Pro Gloss Ultra Pro Eclipse sleeves.
No better time.
Yeah, I'm gonna take some of my decks and unsleeve them and put them into the Pro Gloss. But the best is getting a new deck that you have to sleeve anyway,
yep,
and sleeve it in the new Pro Gloss stuff, because they have this new translucent back that makes it so that the cards retain their vibrancy. So
yeah,
especially Anowon and what's the other one, Obun, they're in foil, so if you want those foils to really look good and really pop, Ultra Pro's new product, the Pro Gloss Eclipse sleeves, is the way to go. Also, they have deck boxes, play mats, everything else to keep your battlefield looking nice and shiny, and also keep all your cards safe.
You also just want the best shuffle feel in the market.
Yeah, that's
just
a good point.
Oh, my goodness.
Eclipses are just butter. Like butter.
Yeah. And the final way to support the show directly is at patreon.com/command zone. We have a Discord there where we hang out every single day answering fan questions. We talk to our community. We also have just tons of people in the community that are really active. We've got CEDH players that can give great advice about deck building. We have casual players that love Vorthos. We got the whole gamut, as well as people like Kyle Hill are chilling in there, as well as our staff. Ashlyn, Craig, Manson, all those people have now joined our Discord, so you can talk to them online as well.
Also, you know, if you watched Mulan on Disney Plus recently, you might have some questions for Jimmy.
Burning questions.
Yeah, about the movie. Yeah, Discord's a really good place to ask, because he responds there very, very quickly. Again, patreon.com/command zone. All right, let's jump into...
Oh, wait. We called someone, too.
Oh, yes. We have to shout out one lucky patron every single episode. Wow.
Sorry, in advance. Jeez, my bad.
But this episode is dedicated to Jonas Turner. Jonas, you rock.
You do.
Sorry we almost forgot you, but we didn't.
But we didn't.
We saved it in the end. Thank you, Jimmy.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Demir Rogue, Sneak Attack, Budget Upgrade Guide. Again, 10 cards in, 10 cards out. Total budget of around $25. We're not going to touch the mana base on this one at all. We did a little on the last one, just to add cards.
It was a lands matters deck, yeah, so we kind of had to there.
Okay. one more, I'm going to reiterate this. We did the deck reveal video for this, so we're not going to do a ton of discussion about the stats of the deck and all that stuff that we already went through. So if you want more thoughts on that, go to episode 347 of our podcast, which was two episodes ago, and check that out for all that rundown. We will read the commander again, though, just so you have the right context if you missed the earlier video, yeah. But you don't want to go back right now.
All right, this one's a fun one. It is a Rogue Matters deck. It's Anawan, the Ruin Thief. 2, a blue and a black Dimir commander for a 2/4 legendary creature, Vampire Rogue. Other rogues you control get +1/+1. And whenever one or more rogues you control deals combat damage to a player, that player mills a card for each one damage dealt to them. If the player mills at least one creature card this way, you draw a card. So this is obviously a attack and Rogues Matters deck. When your rogues deal damage, they're going to mill cards equal to the damage that was dealt to them by those rogues. And then if there's creature cards that get milled, you get a draw card as a result.
Another important thing to mention about the rules on the card is the wording that whenever a rogue you control deals combat damage to a player, mm-hmm. that player mills a card for one damage dealt. And then if the player mills at least one creature card this way, you draw a card. So you can't draw more than one card per player.
Right, but you can
hit them with 12 rogues. You'll only draw one card. But you're about to say.
Yeah, you can draw three cards if there are three opponents and you swing at all three of them and connect for damage and meet the requirements.
And mill a creature card. Unlikely to happen, but it's possible to draw multiple cards off different opponents.
Yep. And also, of course, there are, you know, normally when we get these pre-cons, there are a lot of new commanders and you can be like, all right, which one? Are we going to choose for the commander? The Dimir deck, because it's only two colors, there are a couple of other legendary creatures in the deck that you could just put as the main commander
if you want to.
Yeah, reprints. Like there's Una, Queen of the Fae, and Sig. So those are possible slots there. But you know what? This is a Rogues Matter deck. Anawan is here, and he's got a very specific strategy, and the deck is kind of built around that. So we're not going to be looking to those other commanders.
Yeah, we're going to build around Anawan. I don't think anybody is buying this deck and then being like, I'm going to put Una in command of it, even though she's sweet. There are two other new cards. We'll run them down really quick. Enigma Thief, 5 blue for a 5/5 Sphinx Rogue with flying, but it has Prowl for 3 and a blue, so you can cast it for its Prowl cost if you've dealt damage with a Sphinx or Rogue this turn. And then when Enigma Thief enters the battlefield, for each opponent, return up to one target non-land permanent that player controls to its owner's hand. Okay. So when it enters the battlefield, you bounce a thing for each opponent.
Yeah, seems pretty good.
If you pay Prowl.
If you pay the Prowl.
For 4 mana, yeah. That's great.
Seven mana. Yeah, you could start winning the game with 7 mana.
Yeah.
Whispersteel Dagger is the next brand new card. It is 2 and a black for an artifact equipment. I'm just looking at the art for the first time on this, and it's
pretty nasty.
Gruesome. Jeez. Yeah. Equipped creature gets +2/+0. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you may cast a creature spell from that player's graveyard this turn, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast that spell, and it costs 3 to equip. So the idea here is now you're giving your creatures more power. When they swing with Anawan out, they're going to mill more cards because they deal more damage, and now you can cast a card that from their graveyard. You can spend mana of any color.
So you still have to pay the mana, though.
Yeah. It's not for free. And this equipment is 3 mana to cast and 3 mana to equip, so it's a bit on the expensive side as well.
I would have liked to see it be 3 and 2.
Yeah.
Then I think it would be a lot. It would have a chance to see play like in the wider world of Commander. I think it still does in some decks, but it's pretty inefficient.
Yeah, and I don't even think Enigma Thief sees that much play outside of this deck or Prowl cost being paid decks, unless you have a reanimator type strategy, in which case it seems like a pretty fun, more on the casual side of cards to reanimate. That's not like, you know, Agent of Treachery.
Right, yeah. But if you don't have rogues in the deck, you're probably not playing it outside of, yeah, I guess.
Maybe
but
a Sphinx Travel?
Sphinx. As reanimator targets go, it's still not even that great, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you can play Agent of Treachery, which is, I think, just better.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the deck contents. There are 3 new cards, 30 basic lands, and 67 reprints. But 3 of the reprints are from Zendikar Rising.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the value here, which is the next category, deck value, we're not going to talk about those 3 cards because we are doing these deck values based on the value of the cards before everything was revealed because we have to record these videos ahead of time. So we're basically going to be calculating the 64 reprints that aren't, you know, stuff that's not from Zendikar Rising or the Zendikar Commander decks. All right.
We're good, but we cannot literally
predict.
Can't
look into the future.
Yeah, not yet.
Okay, so there are 5 cards over $5, 14 cards over $2. We're not going to run down those cards again. Watch the reveal video if you want to see that. The total reprint value of this deck is $106.16. Pretty good.
pretty good. And a lot of that was loaded in the cards $5 and over.
Because yeah.
Una, again, a very classic commander card, has steadily climbed in price.
Sig wasn't cheap a bunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Comparing it to C20, the Ikoria decks from earlier this year, their reprint value on average was $97.48.
And that's just for reprints. Again, there were a series of cards in those decks that have all skyrocketed in value.
Here's Guardianship.
Deflecting Swat.
Yeah.
So again, because there are brand new cards and those have values themselves, you have to take that with a grain of salt with the average.
Yeah, the C20 decks had 20 new cards each, so those values were not calculated right.
Yeah.
But reprint value, this is actually a little higher than the C20 decks, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Again, we're not going to go through any of the reprints in the deck in this video because we did it in the reveal video.
Yeah, the most notable thing is that this is just another chance for Wizards to reprint cards, and mm-hmm. especially ones that, like, you know, Una, Queen of the Fae may not fit into, like, the next Modern Horizon set.
Right.
But it certainly can find its way into a deck that cares about making rogues and attacking and stuff. So that's neat to see that there are places for these higher value cards to just see light again.
All right, let's run down this stats of the deck, just because we want you to have the context of why we're making the choices of what to add and take out. So there are ramp cards, 7 card draw cards, a little low, but remember Anawan is a card draw card. There are 4 board wipes, 7 targeted removal spells.
There we go.
So our essential categories all look pretty good. Ramp and card draw slightly low. I'd say card draw is closer, though, because your commander gives you always access to some card draw.
Yeah, and you're in blue and black, so ramp is actually a little more important in these colors because you don't have land ramp. So.
Yeah, so a little more ramp might be nice. Rogues, there are 26 rogues in the deck, or cards that create rogues, which is good. We like to see at least 25 when we've got a main theme, so mm-hmm. we're there, although we're at the lower end of that. There are 11 rogue payoff cards, 4 cards with Prowl, and then Anawan himself is also a rogue payoff card.
Mm-hmm.
There are only 3 mill effects, so cards that will mill your opponents. Anawan is also a mill effect, so it doesn't appear as if the deck is focused at all towards actually trying to win by milling.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of just trying to get card draw that way.
Yep.
There are 10 mill payoff cards, though. So that's a lot of payoffs for not very much milling, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is reanimating stuff from graveyards, like cards that say, get a creature from somebody's graveyard, preferably your opponent because you milled it, onto the battlefield.
Whispersteel Dagger is one of those mill payoffs, by the way.
For sure, yep. And then ways to pump creatures, there are 7. And again, you're milling according to the power of your creatures. Also, you're just going to get a bunch of rogues out, and a lot of rogues are unblockable, so just how much damage can you do? Because rogues are usually unblockable, but small.
Like 1-3, 2-3.
Yeah, exactly.
And trying to mill a creature card with Anwan out, and you're only milling 2 cards, the more you can mill, the better.
That's a really good point. All right, so let that contextualize the choices we're about to make and talk about here. So let's talk about the cards we want to add to the deck. Remember, our total budget is $25 for this exercise, around.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be real sticklers. If it's 27 or something, that's fine. So yes, if you have Cyclonic Rift and those type of cards,
Please add them
to the deck, but we're not going to talk about, you know, those expensive staple cards. All right.
Yep, yep.
One thing I wanted to note before we get started is, this is not the official part of our 10 in, 10 out, but I would try and take out some of the bad ramp cards, like the Key Rune and the Locket, because those are 3 CMC rocks.
And your commander is 4 CMC, so having something at 3 just isn't that great.
So I try to replace that with, like, just the better ramp that's available at around that mana cost. Worn Power Stone, Wayfarer's Bauble, on the more expensive side, Coalition Relic, Fellwar Stone, the Talisman.
Yeah.
Those are all options that are better than the Key Rune and the Locket by a lot.
Yeah, again, because your commander's 4 mana, you want to play it on turn 4, and playing a rock on turn 3 isn't going to get you there.
And these 3 mana rocks are pretty crappy. They don't, like, they only give you 1 extra mana. You can do that for 2 mana, right?
Yeah. And sorry, you want to play your commander on turn 3, so you want to have 2 mana rocks. Sorry, misspoke there.
Okay, let's go into the first section of cards to add, and it's more rogues.
Yeah.
I think 26 is at the low end, but you just want to have rogues out all the time. So I just think you want to push that number up to 30 or more rogues.
And they printed a bunch of really good ones in recent years, too. So the first one is Thieves Guild Enforcer. For a black man, you get a 1/1 flash human rogue. And whenever Thieves Guild Enforcer or another rogue enters the battlefield under control, each opponent mills 2 cards. As long as an opponent has 8 or more cards in their graveyard, Thieves Guild Enforcer gets +2/+1 and has Death Touch. So this becomes a 3/2 with Death Touch pretty quickly, not to mention if you have a bunch of rogues, this costs 1 mana, it's a black mana, and it's a got flash, so it's really cheap, really efficient, mill everyone out, get a little extra value.
Yeah, and the Death Touch makes it sort of unblockable, right? If they have a high value thing, they're not going to really want to block, just because they it's not even that they're letting you draw a card. They're only maybe letting you draw a card to let it hit them, and it's only three. So yeah. I like this quite a bit just as an efficiency play.
And it's great for the mill payoffs as well, just to maybe get something in there for your Whisper Seal Dagger or whatever else it is.
One thing we didn't mention in this episode about Anawan that's important is that the milling part where you draw the card, if you mill a creature card, you draw a card, is only tied to Anawan's ability. So if you mill a creature card with the Thieves Guild Enforcer, even if Anawan's out, you will not draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. It's not in there for that.
Yep.
The next one is, what's that card's name? Thieves Guild Enforcer is about 75 cents, so very cheap.
Not bad.
The next one is Ink Fathom Infiltrator. It is a hybrid, two hybrid Dimir mana. So blue-blue, black-black, or blue-black for a 2/1 Merfolk Rogue, and it can't be blocked and can't block.
It's never going to block anyway because this thing's turning sideways every single chance you get with Anawan out.
Yep.
Just highly efficient. We've talked a lot about lowering the mana curve on decks now and seeing that rogues can be really cheap and efficient. And chances are people aren't really going to even have blockers out. So even if they can block, the chances are in those very early turns won't be able to. So by turn three, you're probably drawing a lot with Anawan.
I mean, if you can go one drop, two drop, three drop, play Anawan, swing with all three rogues, you have a good chance of drawing a card or two right there.
Yeah.
That's really what you want to do if you can't get a ramp piece on two to get him out on three, right?
Yeah, and these combat-based decks, too, I think have to rely heavily on card draw because you're not sitting and building a value engine. Your value engine could just be taken out by a board wipe. So yeah. You got to get it in early and fast. All right, Glint Sleeve Siphoner is the next card. Oh, by the way, Ink Fathom Infiltrator is $2. It's a bit of an older card from Shalimor, so that's why. All right, the next card is Glint Sleeve Siphoner, 1 black for a creature, human rogue, 2/1 with menace. Also very good in this deck. Whenever Glint Sleeve Siphoner enters the battlefield or attacks, you get an energy counter. Haven't seen this in a while. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may pay 2 energy, and if you do, draw a card and you lose 1 life. So when it enters the battlefield, you get 1 energy counter. When it attacks, you get another energy counter. And then the next upkeep, you can spend both of those to draw a card and lose a life. So it's like a very slow Phyrexian Arena. But this is the kind of card that, with Menace, can get in quite a bit, do a lot of damage, and get you even more energy over time, and hopefully just draw you cards. And it seems like a good value engine over time. It's not quick and dirty and fast, but it also builds well into the deck because it's a rogue.
Yeah, two drop. You're just looking for low mana rogues that are going to be efficient, right?
Yeah.
As far as like cost efficient, and also like this is going to replace itself in most games. If you played on 2, on 3, you attack with it, and on turn 4, it's already drawn a card and replaced itself. Mm-hmm. And now anything you get with Anawan and the rest of it is kind of like gravy.
Yep.
Okay. The next card is Ink Fathom Witch. This is an important one. It's 1 blue and 1 black for a 1/1 Merfolk Wizard, not a rogue. Has fear. This creature can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and or black creatures. But the important part, you can pay 2 blue and 1 black, and each unblocked creature has base power and toughness 4/1 until end of turn. The big thing with both the Naya deck and the Dimir Rogue deck when breaking it down that we notice is there are not very many win cons.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of ways for these decks to actually end the game. And so Dimir not known for like mass pump, right? They don't have Craterhoof Behemoths and stuff. And so you're looking for ways to be able to sort of alpha strike, and I have 5 rogues out. How can I turn that into victory? Turning them all into 4 power things is one way to do it. Also, yeah. Just in general, good with Anawan because they'll hit for more,
yep,
and mill more likely to draw cards.
Yeah, I actually like this quite a lot. It almost reads like an enchantment, if anything. And yep. Now it gives your opponents, too, also like, hey, like, let's say you just want to attack because you want them to trade away one of their bare creatures. Ink Fathom, which just makes them go like, am I going to take 16 damage right now and go to like 4?
Yeah.
Or do I block and lose a couple of my creatures in the process?
Yeah, there's that fear of activation or whatever that we talk about. Yeah.
All right, this next one is Knowledge Exploitation. Is a tribal sorcery for rogues, and it is a 5 blue-blue casting cost. However, it's got Prowl for 3 blue. So again, you can cast this card for its Prowl cost if you dealt damage to a player with a rogue this turn.
So it's 4 mana. Most of the time for you.
Oh, search target opponent's library for an instant or sorcery card. You may cast that without paying its mana cost. Then that player shuffles their library. This reads like expropriate.
This
7
is,
mana
yeah.
expropriate, right?
This card is nuts. Instant or sorcery. Yeah, just target the player that's likely to have expropriate or time stretch or something like that in their deck. This could be a win con for sure. just super, you're going to find something that's worth way more than the four mana you paid in almost 100%. Every deck, right?
Even if it is just a board wipe, right? Yeah. Like, there are times when you just need to get a card in, and this works as a tutor in a lot of ways, and as a blue-black deck, is going to give you access to cards you would never have otherwise.
Yeah, this card, I'll be honest, likely to raise in price quite a bit once this deck is revealed. So sorry if at the time that you're watching this, it's not still $4.
Yeah, but this card is a lot of fun too. Just 7 mana expropriate. I'll take it. Better than 9.
Yeah. Okay, and then as mentioned with Inkfathom Witch, it is difficult to find game enders that work with your rogue strategy. Mm-hmm. So we're going to actually spend a decent portion of our budget, but I think it's worth it on Coat of Arms, which is about $9 right now. It's 5 mana for an artifact, but each creature gets +1/+1 for each other creature on the battlefield that shares at least one creature type with it. So if you have 5 rogues out, they'll all get +4/+4. And this is a way to just play this and the game. I should say, with Inkfathom Witch and with Coat of Arms, I think the proper play pattern in most games is to hold them in hand and play them the turn you can swing with enough things to like take somebody out or something, or at least
threaten lethal,
or at least do enough damage that you're for sure to draw a bunch of cards or something. You don't want to just play it out early because the surprise factor will be important.
And people will get rid of a card like this once they're starting, you know, if you're starting to hit someone for 6 to 8 damage a turn, life totals will go down really quickly.
So, I mean, if you have 5 1/1s or 2/2s out and they're looking at 6 damage, they might be like, whatever, I'm just not going to worry about it. I could cast my board wipe, but I'm not going to. And then you go, Coat of Arms, kill you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you played Coat of Arms and then cast 5 rogues, they're like, I have to cast my board wipe right now, and they do it. So just play smart.
Yeah. Even if it's like Coat of Arms take you down to 3, that's good enough for someone else to be like, okay, cool, I'll just chip in with a flyer and end them right there.
All right, the next category is more essentials. So this
I love some essentials.
Yeah, we're a little low on ramp and draw, and I want to make sure that the deck has enough of that. So let's talk about a card that is pretty new.
Yeah, pretty new, and is a card that we've seen versions of in the past, but this is just great for this kind of deck and any attacky-based decks. It's Reconnaissance Mission from Ikoria. 2 blue-blue for an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. Woohoo! And you can also pay 2 to cycle it, so you can discard it and draw a card. So that is just gravy on top. Typically, you're going to be playing this out. This is great. You're doing a lot of damage anyway, and this guarantees you're going to draw a card. Sometimes you'll even draw 2 with Anawan out.
Yep, yep. So it's... And then a lot of, again, rogues have unblockable or menace or ways that, like, they're hard to block. So this is a 25-cent card. Seems like a slam dunk in this deck.
Seems like a slam dunk in a lot of decks, actually. I'd keep an eye out for that one.
A card that's staple-y, but still not super expensive, so we can put it in here, is Sword of the Animist. 2 mana for an artifact that gives +1/+1. Sorry, artifact equipment that gives +1/+1 to equip creature. Cost 2 to equip, and says when an equipped creature attacks, you may search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle your library. So this ramp. Is ramp. Yeah, and also pumps the creature so it mills more and more likely to draw a card.
Yeah, equipment actually somewhat better in this deck. You can tell because they added Whisper Steel Dagger as an equipment. There's some in the deck as well, but I love this card. It's just wonderful. Any deck that doesn't have green in it.
Yep.
Next up is a great addition. I really like that this is here. It's Scheming Symmetry. A black for a sorcery, choose 2 target players. Each of them searches their library for a card, then shuffles their library and puts that card on top of it. Why? Why not put a creature on top for your opponent?
Yeah.
Well, if they can choose.
Yeah, yeah. But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You're going to mill them.
Because you're going to mill them, so they don't get their card, and you're going to get yours.
Well, I mean, ideally, you're also doing this to the player that doesn't have graveyard synergies, but there's probably going to be at least one player out there that does this. And there are times, too, where you Scheming Symmetry and go, we need a board wipe. Can you help?
If I give you the means to get a board wipe, will you cast it on your turn? Yes. Okay, Scheming Symmetry. Great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And now you get to get an awesome card, and they solve the problem for you with their next draw step, too.
You kind of just drew 2 cards with that, got 2 tutors out of it. Nice.
The next one is another underrated card. It's only about $1 and probably should go in more decks. It's Mask of Memory, 2 mana for an equipment. Equip cost is 1. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you may draw 2 cards.
Wow.
If you do, discard a card. So you get like card filtering. It's better than drawing just 1 card, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Not to mention if you have, it's a black deck, there are cards that will care about the graveyard as well. And the equip cost being 1 is a big difference maker.
Yep. You get this onto one of your unblockable things, and you're just rifling through your deck, getting the best cards, you know, throughout the course of the game. It's going to really make a difference.
The stats on this are the same as Swiftfoot Boots, and we all know how good that is.
Yep.
So,
all right. So those were our 10 cards to add in. Now let's talk about our cards to remove. I put under this focus.
Focus your energy.
Yes. because the deck is a little bit unfocused at the moment. So
yeah. Also, if we just looking casual glance at the CMCs, a lot of these cards, they are pretty up there.
Yeah, they're all so, 5, 6, and 7. Like,
yeah.
We know from experience, you're not likely to cast anything that's like 7 CMC or more. 6 and 7 drops, I just don't want barely any in my decks anymore.
No, man. Yeah. It feels so different than the first days of Commander when you're just like, oh, I'm going to slam dunk this 8-drop, this 10-drop. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not just anymore. That's just not how the format has evolved.
Nope. Okay. This first one category.
Oh, sorry.
Is expensive reanimation, because we don't want it to be expensive.
Yeah, you want to reanimate stuff, but you don't want to pay what you would pay for the normal cost of an expensive creature to reanimate it, right?
Yeah. If you're reanimating a card that's like 5 CMC and you cast this one, you're just like, oh man, I just lost.
Yeah, I just overpaid.
No thanks.
Yeah, I got ripped off.
The first one is Faded Return from the original Theros block. 4BBB for an instant. That's 7 mana. It is an instant though. Put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. It gains indestructible, and if it's your turn, scry 2. One, I never want it to be my turn if I have to cast this card. But yeah, 7 mana to reanimate a card. Now, of course, instant from any graveyard. There are some upsides, but overall, just way too expensive.
Yeah, it gives indestructible. I think this would maybe be playable in a deck that's holding up a lot of its mana, but you're casting rogues on your turn because they need to attack the next turn. So you don't want to be holding open your mana, right?
And you're drawing cards, right? So you're going to have options. You don't want to be in the point where it's just like, well, I have to hold it open 7 mana to cast this on someone's end step. Ugh.
Yeah. The next one is Extract from Darkness. It's 3BBB for a sorcery. Each player mills 2 cards. Then you put a creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. Again, 5 mana. It's just too much. Like, you can play 5 CMC creatures that you know what they'll do and you know what you'll get. And I still don't generally want to do that. 5 is just too much.
Yeah. And again, like the milling, you want it to be attached to when an Anawan or a rogue is attacking to draw cards out of it. So just incidentally milling people can sometimes be a big no-no in certain play groups. Rise from the Grave, 4BBB for a sorcery. Put target creature card from a graveyard on the battlefield under control. That creature is a black zombie in addition to its other colors and types.
5 mana, just too much. And this next one, I think you could talk yourself into it, because it's called Endless Obedience, and it's 4BBB for a sorcery, but it has Convoke.
Ah.
So your creatures can help cast this spell, and each creature you tap while casting this spell will pay for 1 or 1 mana of that creature's color. So you could say, oh, if I tap 3 creatures, this is going to be 3 mana. And it says, put target card, creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. Here's the thing. You want to be attacking with your rogues. You do not want to be tapping them for Convoke. So I just don't think that you're likely to actually want to Convoke this thing, in which case, 6 mana. No, thank you.
Also, like, let's say you're in a position where it's like, I can't attack anyone. Getting 1 creature card out of someone else's graveyard isn't going to be as effective as doing anything else. Like, that 1 creature card isn't going to all of a sudden magically make your creatures be able to attack again. And, like, you're right. The focus is being drawn off of what you're trying to do here. Like, if you're in that bad position where it's like, I can't attack, maybe I'll tap them for Convoke, then you're just kind of putting yourself in a worse position. Unless you're, like, grabbing an Elesh Norn or something nuts. But
yeah, but you never know in any given game whether there's going to be anything that good. Also, like we said, a lot of rogues have unblockable and stuff, so they're still going to be able to attack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, this next category is called Off Plan. So we've talked about the plan of the deck. These are cards that are a bit off the beaten road here.
Like this has nothing to do with the deck it's doing, right?
Yeah, it's a cool card though. It's Spinal Embrace, 3BBB, so 6 mana for an instant. That's pretty expensive. Cast the spell only during combat. Okay. Untap target creature you don't control and gain control of it. It gains haste until end of turn. At the beginning of the next end step, sacrifice it. If you do, gain life equal to its toughness. So this, in a way, is a 6 mana removal spell, and you can do it on other players' turns as well, but it's 6 mana, and I really don't know what they're trying to do here. Maybe you get rid of a blocker so your rogues can come through on your turn. Maybe you stop them from attacking from something.
I mean, best case scenario, I guess, is you get attacked, you steal another creature,
block
you, 2-for-1 your 2 opponents. But then, like you said, you have to be holding open mana in a deck that wants to attack with creatures and cast creatures on its turn. You're not holding 6 mana open. You just don't want to do that.
For a fun little combat trick, yeah.
That may not even, like, they may not attack you.
Yeah.
Or they might attack you with something where it doesn't matter what you steal, you can't kill it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, I don't like that card at all in this deck. The next one is Stolen Identity, 4BBB for a sorcery. Create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature, and then it has Cipher. So when you cast a spell, you can encode it on a creature you control, and whenever that creature deals combat damage to a player, its controller may cast a copy of the encoded card without paying its mana cost. So this card, I think, is decent in this deck, don't get me wrong. I just think that it's Magical Christmas Land a lot of the time, because it's 6 mana on the front end. It's just so much mana to create a token copy of something. And yes, then you Cipher it onto one of your rogues that's unblockable, swing, and make a second copy. There are cards for six mana like Saheeli's Artistry that will just make two token copies.
Right.
And then, like,
you know what's going to happen. You don't need to worry about your card being destroyed in combat.
And you played a lot of Commander, Jimmy.
Yeah.
How many times has a Cypher card? It's basically an enchantment once it lands on the thing, right?
Yeah.
How many times do you, you're like, yeah, I got to activate that Cypher three times in a game?
Well, considering you're only attacking once every four turns, it's not going to happen that often.
Yeah.
I could see a card like Cypher cards having better use in decks that want to attack a bunch, have extra combat steps.
I mean, this does want to attack a lot, but I just think like six mana is too much. I think if the Cypher card was a lot cheaper, then I would be more in on it. But it's going to sit in your hand doing nothing, and then you hope that you like play it, attack with it, and then attack another time before it's really good.
Yeah, and just look at cards like Mirror Maid or Mirage Mirror. There's just other ways to create copies of cards that are way cheaper and probably have a lot more utility as well.
For sure. Mirage Mirror is a million times better than that card. Unfortunately, out of our budget range. Yeah. Your fault, by the way.
My fault. Yeah, sorry, guys. And that awesome animation. I think we got to give some props to the animation because every now and then plays it, everyone like, ah, I did it. I did the thing. Okay. Next up is Scytheclaw, a 5-mana artifact equipment. However, it is a living weapon, so when it enters the battlefield, you actually attach a 0/0 black germ creature token to it, and then it gets +1/+1. And whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, that player loses half their life rounded up. Equip cost 3. These cards look way better than they actually ever play.
You just never can do it. It's 8 mana.
It's a lightning rod for your card, too. Someone's just going to be like, blah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, pay 5. Okay, next turn, go to equip it to that creature. They're like, in response, kill that thing. And you're like, okay, I just wasted 8 mana and nothing's happened yet.
Yeah. But that almost got their life to half their total.
All right, the next one is, and I thought about this one for a long time. I think this card is okay in the deck. It's kind of like the Cypher card. But
it might be better in this deck, honestly.
Yeah, I think actually it's better in the Nia Landfall deck. It's Blackblade Reforged. It's 2 mana for an equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each land you control. Now, it's interesting. It has an equip cost of 7, but it says equip legendary creature only costs 3.
Yeah.
So, 3 equip is still a lot, but it can give a huge power and toughness boost, right? Yeah, it's 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, yeah, crazy.
So, Anawan. And the thing is, there's a number of legendary creatures in this deck. Una, Sig, there's like more legendary creatures in this deck than most because a lot of good rogues are legendary.
Right.
I thought about it for a long time. I just think it's off the plan of the deck and it is very expensive. And when you don't have a legendary creature out, it's horrible. 7 mana to equip is just stone unplayable.
And you don't have land ramp.
Yeah.
You know, we had to add land ramp in. So it's like the chances that it's even
going to be mana ramp. It's not even land ramp. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like, what if it's just one of those games where you only get 5 mana out the entire game? Ugh, this card looks real bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Final category here is just unreliable, which actually seems like could fit into a lot of these. Hope there's a card I want to reanimate. The first up is Night Howler, another Theros card. 1 black-black for an enchantment creature horror. It's a 0/0, but it's got a bestow cost of 2 black-black. So you can cast these cards as bestow for their bestow cost, and it becomes an aura spell that enchants a creature. And then when that creature dies, it sort of like becomes the creature that you cast it as originally. Night Howler and enchanted creature each get +X/+X, where X is the number of creature cards in all graveyards.
So if you enchant a rogue with it, maybe they get like +2/+2 or something, yeah, and then eventually that rogue dies and the Night Howler jumps off and maybe it's like a 5/5 or a 6/6 or whatever.
But the Night Howler at that point is just not useful because it's not a rogue and doesn't do anything else for your deck.
Yeah, and I can imagine a lot of scenarios where you're like turn 4, you haven't really milled much yet because Anawan hasn't been out yet. And so you play this card and it doesn't do anything, and then you're just like, oh boy, I hope I mill a lot of creatures. And you're not actually milling for a ton, right?
Yeah.
So I just, to me, just unreliable.
Very unreliable. And it doesn't do anything when it finally hops off and stops becoming a bestow creature.
All right, and the next one and the last one is Open into Wonder. It's a sorcery, blue, and X. X target creatures can't be blocked this turn. Until end of turn, those creatures gain, whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. Here's the thing about this card. There are a bunch of cards that exist that just say blue, X, draw X cards.
Yeah.
Why the heck do I need a bunch of conditions attached to that type of card? I can just play Brain Geyser. Or there's a million iterations, or there's some that cost 1 more mana or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like this card is just horrible to me in almost all circumstances, unless you actually need the creatures can't be blocked because you're sneaking damage in. But most of your rogues already can't be blocked, so you don't care about that part that much.
Yeah, and like let's say you're doing 3 players, 3 rogues attacking them. That's 5 mana. Any of them are susceptible to removal. What are you going to draw? 3 cards off of it? Ooh, doesn't seem great. I mean, the only time I would play a card like this is because, yeah, like you said, you can't be blocked, those creatures, and maybe that's going to win you the game. But otherwise, you could just play any other X blue-blue draw card or Reconnaissance Mission.
Yeah. I'd say that roughly half your creatures, if not more, already can't be blocked.
Right.
So in that three creature scenario, you're actually only giving one of them unblockable because the other two have, one has medicine, one is unblockable.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I paid five mana, and then they can Mazavith and stuff, where you're like, hey, if I just played literal Brain Geyser, I would just know I'm drawing the cards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And also, what if I have 12 mana but only three creatures? I can't draw nine cards, whereas with Brain Geyser, I could.
Right.
So like, yeah, just don't play that card.
It doesn't scale well. It's too reliant on you having creatures. It's just a weird magical Christmas land that is, I don't know.
It's just bad.
Doesn't seem good, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's it. 10 cards in, 10 cards out to the listeners. What do you think of the Dimir Rogue Tribal Sneak Attack deck? What do you think of these set decks in general?
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
Yeah, we've gone through the Naya deck, the Dimir deck. What do you think of them? They are obviously a little bit different than the traditional Commander precons that we're used to.
Yeah.
Do you like this? Are you excited that they're doing these for basically every set now?
I think we can reasonably say that we're going to see these throughout the next year. And it's something that I know that Gavin also wants feedback on. And he was actually all over our Dimir preview deck episode. So definitely encourage you all as well to send him a tweet. Send us a message. I want to see like what kinds of players are buying these and if they're having a good time as well, especially if they're new players, because that's an important part of the game.
Speaking of buying these,
oh yeah,
just go to cardkingdom.com/command zone. You can pre-order either of these decks, both of these decks, right now. You can pre-order Zendikar Rising, booster boxes, collectors, boosters, singles, if you want to just, that's the most efficient way to spend your money, obviously, if you're a Commander player, you know what cards you want for which decks.
Yep, foil, full art lands, all of them.
You're going to buy these cards anyway. If you just use cardkingdom.com/command zone when you do, you're simultaneously supporting the content that you enjoy. We really do appreciate everybody that does that.
Yep, and of course, when you get those sweet foil, full art lands, or any card, and you want to sleeve them up, put them into a deck, or put them into a binder, Ultra Pro is your number one place to go. They make all sorts of folios to store your cards in. Recently, Cash has been going nuts. I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter.
Oh my gosh, he opened over 100 VIP boosters.
Yeah, and of course, he stores them all in Ultra Pro sleeves, and that man knows how to keep his
like
cards
$10,000
safe.
Worth of sealed product that he opened.
It's pretty nuts. Yeah,
I know.
It's like, holy
man,
moly.
That's like too bad my NFL career didn't pan out.
I know, right? That's like one Brady pass. He just makes all of that back. So again, Cash uses Ultra Pro, and it's great to see him flip through all the cards and he puts into his binder. It's a great way to organize it, bring it around to conventions if you want to trade as well.
If he's using Ultra Pro, they're the best, because Cash's like his collection is worth a lot.
Yeah, and that's how we all became, we knew about him, his expensive collection getting stolen.
Yeah.
So he's obviously trusting Ultra Pro, and we do as well. For our Kickstarter playmat, which we should mention, it's only going to be up for a little bit longer. We'll show you all this. It is the Epic Play playmat printed on Ultra Pro. These playmats have stuck around forever. Their quality is amazing. I still have playmats from our very first Kickstarter that are pristine condition. So make sure you check that out in the more info box below. Support the playmat, and you won't be able to get it afterwards. But more importantly, support Ultra Pro in general, because that is going to be the way that you support the show.
All right. Yeah. No end step on these upgrade videos because they are bonus episodes. We'll be back with our set review. We're going to be doing the best new commanders actually next up. There's a lot of new commanders.
There's a lot. Yeah, really.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about all that. So keep an eye out for that probably next week or later this week. I have no idea when this episode is coming out. So just forget any dates that I threw out there and just subscribe to the channel. There you go.
Then you'll know. Notifications. Hit the little bell. Ding, ding.
All right. Special thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Albert Estaca, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, and Sam Waldo.
Nice. You can do it all in one breath now.
Whew.
Tough.
We add a couple more people, I won't be able to.
Yeah, we have to actually print more pages out. And of course, big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer. As always, he does the living card animations that live behind us on set alongside Sam Waldo now. And his amazing animations open our show at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. You can find him online at Living Cards MTG.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans. Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing, to the weird, to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.